Well, hopefully our guests will show up. Otherwise, it's going to be an abbreviated online dinner party. But we're over here at some of the fine restaurants over here in the Durham area and all of that. So actually, I'm seeing some good friends of mine going out and getting some good food and all of that. So I may have to join them after a while because I'm seeing some places that I might want to go and check out myself. So definitely, that's what we've got going on over here. And like I said, I did send out an invitation to the guests. So hopefully they will show up and catch up at the current location as we were having some sort of technical difficulties on our side. So we're going to see if this all works out. But if it does not, then we'll just have an abbreviated version of the online dinner party. I did promise you that I would be bringing you some of our mystery guests, and I do want to do that even if they do not show up, my regularly scheduled guests and all of that. But I did send them a note, and hopefully they will catch that note and be able to appear and have a good conversation with us and all of that. But I am going to let y'all check out some of the things that I already had situated and planned for us on this particular afternoon and all of that. So hopefully y'all enjoy some of these conversations and all of that. But definitely technical difficulties do happen sometimes, and we just have to kind of roll with the punches and see what happens in that regard. So that's what I'm doing. I'm going to try to roll with the punches and see what goes on in this regard. But like I said, we do have some clues of our mystery guests and all of that. So one of the mystery guest clues is this particular clue. The ability to get out of shackles or a lock wasn't a complicated skill or relied on some strange level of flexibility. He would simply have keys tucked in places that no one would expect. So he would have keys tucked in places that folks would not expect. So that's one of the clues of our mystery guest. Whether it was under his foot or trapped in his hair, there was always a way to unlock the lock. In a pinch, he'd bring in a partner who would just palm him a key before he'd begin his illusion. So that's one of the other mystery clues and all of that. He was also very fluent in German and already had a knack for sleight of hand. To the British, this meant that he would always make for the perfect spy. So I don't know if y'all have any idea who this particular mystery guest may be and all of that, but that is some of the clues about our current mystery guest and all of that. He would end up passing along information to the British from what he learned while performing in both Germany and Russia, thanks to access he had to their heads of state and all of that. So he definitely had access to a number of folks that folks may not have been expecting. And so that's another one of this mystery guest clues and all of that. So definitely keep those thoughts in mind as you try to figure out who our mystery guest is and all of that. So they said that he had many loves in his life. He had a love for flying and watched avidly as the technology developed in the early 1900s. In 1910, he would become just the third person to fly across Australia. So definitely that's another clue as well. And his ability to get out of tight spots would eventually bring him a personal invitation to meet with Woodrow Wilson. That's President Woodrow Wilson he had the opportunity to meet with. And when his mother died, he became very intrigued with the idea that the living could communicate with the spirits of those who had passed on before. His interest would quickly fade when he realized that the mediums were basically doing the same thing that he was doing, but selling their performance at the expense of people's emotions. So that's another one of the clues that exists in everything along that line. He would end up spending, they say, 25 years of his life investigating and discrediting mediums. He did narrowly escape death dozens of times during his act, but a simple punch to the stomach is what eventually seemed to have killed him. So that's definitely what they say, because they said that a college student, that's right, a college student, I'm actually not that far from a college campus, challenged him about how strong his abdominal muscles were and punched him in the stomach. He would wind up passing away because of an infected and ruptured appendix. So that's another clue about this particular person and all of that. He was also the longest serving president in the history of the Society of American Magicians, and he is honored with a broken wand ceremony where he is buried. So he is honored with a broken wand ceremony at the location where he is buried. So that's some of the clues about this particular mystery guest and all of that. So I'm thinking that y'all should have a good idea who the mystery guest is and all of that. So they say he may have spent the majority of his life trying to discredit mediums, but that didn't stop his wife from trying to contact him after his own death. And he said that no prison can hold me, no hands or leg irons or steel locks can shackle me, no ropes or chains can keep me from my freedom. And this is another quote that he says, what the eye sees, the ear hears, and the mind believes. And he also said, never tell the audience how good you are. They will soon find out for themselves. So they will soon find out for themselves how good you are and all of that. And another thing he said is that magic is the sole science that not accepted by scientists because they cannot understand it. So he said that they cannot understand that. And that was one of his thoughts, that they cannot understand it whatsoever. So that was his everything. He also said, my chief task has been to conquer fear. The public sees only the thrill of the accomplished trip. They have no conception of the torturous preliminary self-training that was necessary to conquer a fear. So no idea of what is needed to conquer fear. That is one of the things that was said by this particular individual. So keep that in mind, that he said that there are no way that you could necessarily conquer the fear. And he also said, never try to fool children. They expect nothing and therefore see everything. They expect nothing and therefore see everything. So that's another clue of that as well. He said, I am not an irretrievable skeptic. I am not hopelessly prejudiced. I am perfectly willing to believe, and my mind is wide open, but I have as yet to be convinced. So I think he was talking about magic and all of that. He says, I am perfectly willing, but the evidence must be sane and conclusive. And another quote that he had was, keep to your enthusiasm. There's nothing more contagious than exuberant enthusiasm. And then another quote he had is, look at this life, all mystery and magic. And one of his greatest escapes, he said, was actually escaping from Appleton, Wisconsin. That's right. He said, the greatest escape I made was when I left Appleton, Wisconsin. So that's another clue about this particular mystery guest that we've got and all of that. So I'm sure a number of y'all have been able to figure out some of the clues about our mystery guest and might even have some ideas as to who we are talking about in that sense. So I'm hoping that y'all are able to figure out the mystery guest and able to guess who our mystery guest might be in that regard. So like I said, a number of great mystery guests, and hopefully you'll learn more about these amazing people and the mystery guests that they are and all of that. So that is one of the mystery guests that we've got going on, and we're hoping that you're going to check it out and learn more about these amazing mystery guests and try to figure out who they are in that sense. I'm sure that a number of you are still trying to guess and may even be doing like some of our past guests and doing the whole Google thing, trying to cheat. And cheating is not allowed. Cheating is never allowed whatsoever. I do see that I've got Rahman Jamal, who has joined me and everything. So how you doing, Rahman? How you doing there?
How you doing, Mark? Glad to be here. Come on. Can you hear me?
How you doing, Rahman?
I'm good. How about yourself? Glad to be up on here. Pretty good.
Glad to be able to have you join me and everything. I've got a great conversation. So tell us a little bit about your what you've got going on. You've definitely got music, and you're definitely involved in the music field. And I know that Aris has told me a lot about you, but I have yet to meet you. So I'd love to learn more about what you're doing.
For sure. So first off, shout out to Hip Hop Congress for hooking this whole thing up. Hip Hop Congress is a 25-plus year network since 93 of artists, activists, educators, and I've been involved since 2000, 2001. It's a vast network. We're actually one of the largest grassroots networks for hip hop organizing in the world. And you know, that's so I just got to shout out everybody that's involved with that, who've been involved with it over the years. And yeah, I got a lot going on, from the new album to just the work over the last 18 years. For being an artist, you know, I got my start in movies. Actually, I starred in a film called The Beat that was at the Sundance Film Festival in 2003. Yeah. It was written and directed by Brandon Sanye, who now is the showrunner for LA's Finest, for anybody that is watching that that show. And that was, we was all real young when we set the record at Sundance. Actually, he was the youngest filmmaker to have a film in there, and I got to play the lead role and write all the music for it. So it's a hip hop urban drama. It's called The Beat, and you can find clips of it on YouTube. But that was my first foyer into Hollywood and the entertainment industry. But being involved in Congress, you know, I had to, it's kind of interesting because the film itself is about making choices and the power of how the choices that you make in life basically like create your life path. And I was playing this role of this character who had to make that choice. The film is kind of cool because it shows you both paths that he could have taken. And when I was faced with making the same choice early on in my career, it was very present in my mind that whatever route I choose to go is going to be my life narrative. And so I had the choice to go Hollywood and pursue fame and celebrity and all of that, which was tempting. But I also had this other side, which was like grassroots activism and in my work with Hip Hop Congress. And so when faced with that decision, it was kind of like, okay, which one am I going to regret the least? You know, because it's like, oh, be famous and go for the money and all of that. But when I was really honest with myself and the way that I write too, as an artist, is very, you know, from the heart, very, very authentic to activism and consciousness and just, you know, helping other people. You know, my upbringing is kind of interesting because I grew up kind of middle class, single parent household, but I got into some really good schools, and that showed me the divide between the people that I grew up around and the people I went to school with. And so being able to have this opportunity to go to some of the best schools in California, you know, it was kind of like, you know, I felt a need from a very young age to try to bridge that gap, you know, take the education that I was getting and use it, you know, not just be like, oh, you know, I'm, you know, cause it's weird because you talk about privilege, right? Like I realized I was very privileged to be able to go to these schools, but to me, it's like the difference between being privileged and being spoiled is like not using your privilege, right? And so having the perspective to be like, look, if I'm lucky enough to get these opportunities and I'm not using it to even the playing field in the way that I can, then I'm really, you know, just kind of out for self. And that's not something that is authentic to me. So, you know, as a hip hop artist, you know, I feel like I've been put in a unique position to really bring a lot to the culture and to the movement through my experience. And it's been amazing to choose that path as opposed to the celebrity path and see all the opportunities that have unfolded since then, both in the social activism, in the education field. You know, I chose to become, instead of like, you know, I'm always an artist, and I'll always be able to take whatever happens to me in life and put that into an artistic and musical form. But to be able to be on the forefront of education as a teaching artist, right? So I took my, after kind of experiencing Hollywood and being like, let me go where it's needed most. I saw education as in dire need of, you know, it needed a refresh. And hip hop was like, hip hop is this vehicle that engages its youth culture. So it engages youth right off the bat. And you can teach so many, you can teach everything through hip hop, really. And I found that out when I wrote my first curriculum. I teamed up with one of the co-founders of Hip Hop Congress named Shimako Noble. We were given an opportunity to get paid to write a curriculum together. And so that's what I've been doing for the past 18 years is my company, Rap Force Academy, has been my bread and butter. So what I make my living off of is staying true to the culture, to the art, by passing it on to other people and teaching in schools, teaching in juvenile halls, you know, all ages, all backgrounds. And it's really starting to make a difference in the education field because people are like, wow, you're using rap to teach. And you see more and more people starting to do this these days. And it was just great to be on the front line of that and to see how education is starting to kind of get up to speed and realize like, yo, culture is really this vehicle for us to, you know, for us to change the world, really.
No doubt. The culture is definitely here and everything. So definitely, I'm glad that you were able to do that and all of that. What was your thoughts when you hear people that were engaged in, we saw activists being used a lot, particularly musical activists, during the case of the Black Lives Matter and things of that nature. So I'd love to hear you talk a little bit more about the impact of Black Lives Matter and the music and how it impacted you and everything.
Man, that's a great question. to be honest, when it first was happening, I was waiting to hear a lot of my favorite hip hop artists speak on that. And I was kind of a little disappointed that I didn't hear people jump on that sooner. I think that, you know, when it's a big thing to kind of wrap your mind around as these things are happening in front of our faces and seeing like, yo, there's a real problem in our country that's still persisting. You know, how do you put that into your expression, your persona as a hip hop artist? You kind of have to be engaged in that type of work to really be able to speak on it right in the moment. And one thing I notice is that, you know, if you're living a lifestyle, let's say, that's influenced by the pop culture or capitalism, then your motivations are kind of in that direction. And so to really make that shift into organizing and activism, you know, they're two different worlds. You know, one is really about business, and the other is really about, you know, helping others and trying to survive as you're doing that. So actually, creatively for me, like my response, I actually put this together on a little project. I was inspired. I was like, well, who would be the artists that I would really, really love to hear rap about what's going on in this moment with this whole Black Lives Matter thing? And it kind of came to me, the artist and rest in peace, MF Doom, who's one of my favorite lyricists, who just recently passed away. He passed away on Halloween, but everybody found out about it on New Year's Eve. And he's one of my favorite artists. And so I wrote a verse in a style of him. I wrote a verse in the style of Eminem. I wrote a verse in the style of Tech N9ne, who are all artists that I respect for their lyrical aesthetic and writing ability. But yeah, the verse in MF Doom style, which I'm pretty proud of. It's kind of like, I hold him to the highest level. You want to hear it? this is my tribute to.
Yeah, let me hear it. But I also wanted to bring in, and I want to check out some of your music and everything, because you got some amazing thoughts and everything. But I did have one other guest I wanted to just bring in really quickly, because she can only give me a little bit of time and everything. And that was Sarah Hill, who's with this organization called Helium, and they do a lot of work with around trauma and things of that nature. So I know I'm going to bring her back on, and I'm going to hopefully bring you back on as well. We were actually having some technical difficulties, so I'm not in my usual studio that I'm usually at. So, but definitely I want both of y'all back and everything. But Sarah, I'd already said that I was going to try to get you on, at least so folks can learn about Helium. And then, like I said, we'll try to get both of you back on a more extensive interview. But I did want folks to learn about what Helium is all about. So Sarah, if you could share a little bit about what you've got going on.
Absolutely. And Ramin, it sounds like you're doing some fascinating work as well. So keep going. And it's a pleasure to meet both of you and share a little bit more about Helium. I apologize that I'm on the road and not able to join you with a camera. But Helium is virtual and augmented reality that's powered by data from your wearables for the Stress Olympics that we're all in right now.
What does that mean?
Yeah. So it's these are apps in virtual and augmented reality that you can plug in either a smartwatch or an EEG brain sensing headband. So if you lower your heart rate, butterflies can hatch around your room in augmented reality just on your phone. Or in virtual reality, if you quiet your mind or improve your focus, inside the goggles, you can make the flurries fly inside a magic snow globe. So it's what's called a digiceutical, a drugless, non-harmful coping mechanism for human performance to improve your focus, to improve your calm in a completely drugless way. And it all happens with your mobile device and data that comes from your wearables. Because after all, how are you supposed to learn to control your stress if you can't see it or interact with it? Or control your focus if you don't know what's happening inside your mind. And so Helium is that feeling mirror that allows you to see your feelings. It gamifies your feelings and reminds you that our thoughts have power to control things, not only in the virtual world, but the real world as well.
Yeah, and y'all are doing some great work, and you actually came out of this from having worked in some very stressful fields yourself. So if you could share a little bit about that as well, because I know that when I read a little bit about your bio, and like I said, we'll definitely explore it in a more extensive interview later, but I do know that you had actually been involved in some stressful work yourself, and this is kind of what led you into getting into helium.
Yeah, a lot of people have stressful jobs, and I spent 25 years as a reporter. A television reporter, covered a lot of trauma. You chase ambulances, rapes, murders, homicides. You have to interview parents who've lost children. We went in with the trauma teams and the aftermath of the tsunami in Sri Lanka and Indonesia. And ultimately, that media diet that I had chosen to consume made me sick and developed an inability to sleep, which, you know, quickly leads to anxiety, panic attacks, and things that are really not good for your body. And so I had to change my media diet. And that's one of the reasons why we created Helium. It's positive fiber. It's positive nutrition. There is something called digital nutrition. And, you know, especially in the world right now, what we're consuming in our social media feeds and on the news is anxiety provoking. And so if we're not balancing it with some, you know, virtual nature, if you can't experience real nature, then that can impact your mental well-being. And so Helium is just that drugless, non-harmful tool that you can go to and get some virtual peace whenever you want it.
Yeah, because I'm imagining a lot of people have probably been in need of your services lately, because I know that there's been a lot of talk about how a lot of folks are paying attention to the social media feeds out there, whether that's Facebook, whether that's Twitter, whether that's a number of other things. And a lot of times we're feeling like we're just overwhelmed with all the news that we're getting from these sources. I mean, I love that I also come out of the media field as well, having been a journalist for a couple of weeklies, as well as definitely in the radio field, and now doing this streaming podcast kind of stuff. But definitely sometimes you feel like you're getting almost too much intake of the news. So I'd love to hear from both of you your thoughts on that, because I know that definitely we've had somebody that's currently in 1600 and on his way out next week that seemed to have had an obsession with what was going on with his Twitter feed and everything. But I don't think he was the only one. A number of folks seem to have that kind of attitude. So it seems like we've become so much of a society of social media. And I'm wondering how that's impacting our mental health and our emotional health.
Yeah, I can take that one. And then Raman, feel free to jump in as well. This is the mental health emergency. In the greater pandemic, calls to mental health hotlines have doubled. Chronic stress, even before the pandemic, was a cause of, 60% of all illness and disease is caused by stress. And so you compound that stress with the job uncertainty, the uncertainty of I'm working remotely, are my kids going to school, I'm having to homeschool my children. You know, think about all of the layers upon layers upon layers of stress that have been piled on. And you can see how there is, in the aftermath of COVID, going to be and is right now a mental health emergency. And so Helium's being deployed not only to the front lines for nurses for compassion fatigue, but for moms and dads and, you know, regular consumers who are experiencing those many layers and not able to mentally or physically cope anymore.
Yeah, I just add that, you know, media literacy is one of the key things in our education system that is an absolute imperative. I didn't take my first media studies class until my senior year in high school, when I realized that so much of what we consume in two dimensions has an impact on the way we think about ourselves. And, you know, to become aware of that is key in being able to make choices that are liberating, and that, you know, you bring it into your awareness that, like, yo, is this something that I should be consuming? Is this something that's making my life better? You know, I'm born in the 80s. So, like, I remember what, y'all, I'm sure, I remember what it was like before the internet, and like, what, how you had to you know, enjoy your time and spend it and everything. Whereas this generation is in a very different reality. So it's interesting to me to see how we're using sort of the technology to try to get it back to our organic experiences. And some people, you know, agree. Some people agree with that. Some people disagree. Like some people are like, yo, unplug from your damn device, you know, for at least this amount of time during the day so that you, you know, you don't become, you know, this cyborg human kind of thing. So I can understand that, especially in education. You know, I was really big about, you know, not depending on virtual education, like, you know, because a lot of schools were starting to experiment with, you know, computer learning and things like that, even before the pandemic. And then, you know, so I was kind of like standing out against that, being like, yo, we need arts, we need organic interaction. It's that relationship, that personal presence that makes a difference when you're educating. And then the pandemic hit. So even, you know, myself having been in the schools and being forced to go virtual, it's been kind of a trip. But at the same time, it's like if everybody's being forced to go virtual, then you need something creative and something that, you know, even that much more, you know, because if you're just forcing kids, you know, if math class is boring in person and now you're on a computer, like it's 10 times as disengaging. And so you need something creative to hold the attention, to keep people together if you're still going to try to get information across. But I feel the homeschool thing. I got a 3-year-old daughter. And when the pandemic hit, you know, my family runs a preschool, run a creative arts preschool for 20 years, and we were forced to get creative on that. And so we created a children's program that was for the students that could no longer come in, but still allowed us to get sort of that foundational lessons across that are so important for every child to be in touch with, like emotions and imagination and things like that. So, you know, you adapt. That this whole thing has caused us to either sink or swim. And I'm glad I'm a creative, because we are used to being able to adapt to, you know, surprising circumstances.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, adaptation, that's something I know a lot of people have been talking about, is how a lot of us are doing that fancy word of pivoting and doing all kinds of pivot because of the pandemic, forcing us to pivot and all of that. It sounds like that's what you've been doing, Sarah. And I know that one of the things that our folks at our network talk about is the fact that they feel that we're using 18th century values in terms of our education system and in terms of the way we're educating for a 21st century world. And it sounds like you're coming up with a 21st century solution, Sarah. So would you agree with like Kim Calhoun and Nick Palveda, who are two of our founders of the International Broadcast Media, that we seem to have not grown enough in terms of developing our education? They would actually argue that we need to have more fiscal literacy. We need to definitely be supportive of the arts and a number of other things that they complained about. And I actually kind of agree with them, but I'd love to hear your thoughts, Sarah.
Yeah, I love how Raman called it a media literacy, because that is so true. You know, we do see ourselves in media, and you know, not all media is bad for you. You need media to provide you information so that you know who to vote for, who to vote against. You know that you're safe from a tornado, that you know that maybe there's a child molester who, you know, lives next door to you. You need that information to keep you safe. And so I'm not of the ilk saying, you know, unplug all of your social media accounts. Not at all. You know, in some instances, it provides some very important information. But it's like anything else. It's like a diet. You know, you eat too much candy and it's going to make you sick. And you consume too much of the, you know, anxiety provoking images, rhetoric. I mean, it's really ugly out there, and you immerse yourself in that ugliness and, you know, you just don't feel good. And so, you know, we really need to take a pause and do some self-checks of, okay, you know, what if I've been feeding my eyes and my heart and my mind over the last few weeks? And do I need to temper that with some visuals, that if I can't get those visuals in my own self because of, you know, travel is limited, you know, maybe it's something like helium in virtual reality or augmented reality, that I can go back to nature and feel like I'm there, even though I'm only in my living room.
Yep. And I've been actually, we had Amy Peck on one of my shows Monday, and she's in that same space of virtual reality and augmented reality. I think her company is called Endeavor or something like that. But she was talking about how a lot of times we're even using these kind of things within the concert world and in the sports world. She was actually of the feeling that we may not be going back to the normal old-fashioned concerts where you might have a auditorium of, say, 1,000, 2,000 seats, but it might be a mixture of both the standard performance, but also some augmented reality and some virtual reality. So I was wondering, Ramon, as a performer, what are your thoughts about that? And then I'd love to hear from Sarah if you think that that is the direction that we're moving in, where it's going to be more of kind of a hybrid version, kind of like what we're seeing in our education fields.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when the whole pandemic hit, a couple, some folks in our network in Hip Hop Congress were able to pivot really quick. We had a shout out to Mike Molda. He was a show promoter, festival promoter, who actually also happened to work for Zoom. And so he knew the technology to be able to throw the first virtual festivals. And so the network was a part of that, and it required him not only putting together the festival like you normally would, but also educating individually each artist how to utilize their home camera and their interfaces so that you could get the best quality performance on a virtual platform. And I know he's continuing to do that into this year. It was called Pass the Stream Festival. So that's something to look out for. We were some of the first people to really start messing with that. And that was kind of an each one, teach one kind of thing. I'm also part of another show called Live at the Dragon, which was the same thing in providing artists. You know, it required a degree of education, and not everybody was willing to adapt and learn how do I do a virtual performance from my home? But those of us that did were able to create that organic feeling space of just sharing time and being authentic as artists. So I agree that it's really all about how you use the technology that's going to, enhance or progress your life or get you stuck. So,
definitely. What are your thoughts on that, Sarah? And I did also acknowledge, because I know that you can't stay with us for so long, because you were actually having a family member that was going through a major surgery. So I did want to wish her well, and I hope that the surgery went well. I believe she was having a knee operation, and I believe that was your mom, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's my mom, actually. And she just texted me and said she's doing well, but I'm ending so that I'm able to go and if not see her, at least FaceTime with her due to the COVID restriction. So thank you for that. And I'll just weigh in on that and then duck out. I do think it's going to be a hybrid as far as real and virtual worlds. And there's value in that, right? You can sell virtual seats. And what this technology of virtual and augmented reality is doing is reducing the physical space between us. In a safe way, you know, specifically as it relates to COVID hygiene protocols. It's giving you access, and it's also selling a bunch of front row seats, right? No longer do you only have to have one physical seat. You can be anywhere inside a virtual world. And Mark, I wish you best of luck, Ramon. It was great to meet you as well. My apologies that I have to duck out.
No, I know you got to bounce. I knew I only had you for a short amount of time, and I do appreciate you giving me that time. And like I said, I will try to reschedule you to come back on. One of the things that I do with all my guests, and I do the same with Ramon, but I try to get everybody to give a thought of positivity or something that they would like to share with our global community. So as you walk out the door and everything, I would love to hear whatever positive message that you would like to share with our global community, because the international broadcast media is heard at various countries, not just here in the United States, but I know we're heard in Australia, South Africa, Nigeria, and a number of other places around the world. So I always like to give people a chance to share their message of positivity.
Absolutely. And I'll just leave these parting words with, this is the Stress Olympics. And not everyone has trained for it. So we need to give ourselves grace, and we need to allow ourselves to recognize that we do have control in the midst of all of this uncertainty with our health, with our jobs, with our family situations. And we need to remind ourselves that our thoughts do have power to control things, not only in the virtual world, but the real world as well.
I greatly appreciate you. And like I said, I know Ramon does as well. And like I said, I will definitely be reaching out to you, and hopefully we'll get you back on a more extensive interview. But I definitely wanted to at least give people a taste of what Helium was all about. And you definitely provided that. So I appreciate you for coming on the Online Dinner Party.
thank you so much. And
Rama, it's nice to meet you.
My best to all you. And your take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Yep. And we definitely wish her mom much health and all of that. Like I said, I think it was knee surgery that she was having. So definitely need to have folks have these, whenever they have these health procedures, whatever it is, whether it's minor or major, I'm always got the thoughts of trying to support them in whatever they are going through, because we know that a lot of folks are going through a lot of things with the pandemic, but a lot of it's also impacting regular day-to-day kind of operations and things of that nature. I know that I've got some friends that have actually had to not have the surgeries they wanted because of being put kind of on the back burner because of what's going on with the pandemic and everything. So we do know that it's impacting the health profession in a number of ways. So that's just the way that it is going and everything. So Ramon, definitely you had mentioned it earlier. When did you first break into the music business? Were you the kid that was always going to be into rap and hip hop, or did you discover this later in life? Or did you think that this was something that you're going to do from the time that you were like a baby coming out of your mother's womb?
Man, the second I heard my first rap tape, I was like, this is what I want to do. Like, this was my passion. I love rhyming. I love writing, and combining those two things was actually one of my first passions. In fact, I would say I first started writing rhymes in fifth grade, and it was a way for me to stay engaged in school. So I had hip hop was coming out, all through the 80s and everything. I remember asking my history teacher at the school that I was at, kind of an alternative kind of school. And I asked if I could write my history report as a rap. And she was like, wow, that's a really interesting idea. Sure, go ahead. And it gave me an opportunity to not only learn the material, but then get that performance bug and that writing bug, out and feed that. And so that kept me also engaged in the learning process. So I think that really informed why why I do what I do today, because I discovered music and rap as a way to engage information and really just get a love for it. I'm really I'm a sponge for information and connecting dots and things like that. And I think that's something that being a language artist, it's a fascinating world to look at it creatively. I try to help kids find that engagement in their own learnings as well. I've been passionate about spitting rhymes for a long time.
And one of the things I love about rhymes is I'm actually a big fan of some of the old legends. Like, I'm a big Gil Scott-Heron fan, and he was talking about the Revolution not being televised a long time ago. And actually, yeah. I guess it is being televised now and everything. Yeah, but he was talking about songs like that, and he was talking about B-Movie, where he was talking about Reagan and a number of other great things of that nature. And, of course, The Last Poet was some folks that I definitely have a great deal of admiration for, as do I have for, like, the some of the early hip hop artists, whether that's the Sugar Hill Gang or whether that's Arrested Development or some of the other great artists that have been out there. But who are some of the people that influenced you, and how important do you think it is? Because I've always thought, I'm actually, my musical background is jazz and blues. My folks started a jazz station when I was a teenager, and I'm now well into my late 50s and everything. But when they started that, I got into blues and jazz. But to me, blues and hip hop are very much connected, because they're very much about telling the story of the world. So telling both the emotions of what we go through, whether that's relationships, whether that's family, whether that's also the news of the day. Because I think that there have been a number of great blues songs that have told about what's going on. I think about Billie Holiday, who's known as both a jazz and a blues artist, and her song Strange Fruit, which is about the lynchings and everything along those lines. But I was just wondering, how important is it for you as an artist to use your platform to tell the stories of what's going on in our world, to kind of like highlight some of the things that are happening?
Man, it's such a deep question, because for me personally, if you can't tell, I'm of a mixed race, right? So my dad is black, my mom is white Jewish, when you talk about these cultures of hip hop and jazz and the blues, these come from the black experience in America, and that's important for all Americans to understand, not because of skin color or whatever, but the fact of human resilience. To be experiencing a world and a society that is trying to limit you, is trying to manipulate you, and the human spirit that creates these things that are outside of the expectation of what humans are capable of, you know, is uniquely connected to the Black experience in America. And so I believe that everybody, whatever color you are, can learn so much about human resilience by understanding, you know, how Black people have responded to these oppressive forces, which really oppress us all. You know, it's in different ways, though. I think that's one of the tricky things about living in our society. Again, why I say media literacy is so important is that most people don't realize that there is an agenda that has been around since the founding of our country that is imparted on young people, on young minds, before we're ever able enough to know how to question it. And by the time you maybe do get learned enough to say, hey, wait a second, like, this is just one side of the story. Right. You know, it kind of forces you to buy into that culture, to buy into putting things like profit and money and material gain over, you know, family and community. And these are things that, you know, people who are oppressed in society have had to rely on because they're not given those certain privileges to, you know, to play with. And so that cultural difference, I believe, is really the root of us finding ourselves, finding truth in a world now today where it's like, what can you trust? What information can you trust? Is it fake? Is it real? Like, all of this stuff. So today's generation is really like kind of at a tough time because, you know, it's like, what do you believe? You can't just take everything that sounds good as realness. You actually have to apply these ideas in life and see, does this create more harmony in my life, or is this creating disharmony? And I think that's the key part, and music really does help you navigate that, you know, that world, that realm. So I really kind of use music as kind of like my barometer for myself on how I'm feeling. And then I learn about it when I share it with other people and say, like, okay, how does this hit people? You know, do I get a positive response from it? Do I get a negative response for it? Why? You know, one of the key things that I learned from my dad being a musician was, you know, he told me that we don't pay enough attention to sound. Well, we're a very sight heavy culture, mm-hmm. right? We're constantly being bombarded, kind of to Sarah's point, we're constantly being bombarded with visuals. And you know, what visuals do is it helps us differentiate the things around us, right? We see that's a different color than that. You got depth, you know, it separates our experience and our field. Whereas sound actually does the opposite. Sound has the power to unify our consciousness. And when you think about the power of music, how it brings people together, it makes people move in unison. That's a very powerful thing to harmonize material matter and humans as part of that, you know. And like, you can see these awesome like experiments on YouTube, you know, where they actually do like sound vibrations and it forms these geometric shapes. And so you know, that to me is everybody's superpower. If we were to really focus on the effect that the sounds that we make have on our environment, then we can get a lot of information just from our organic experience that you know, that is kind of tailor-made for whatever it is that you're trying to learn about yourself and your role in the world. So
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And one of the things that I've really been fascinated by is a lot of times you'll hear people talk about like even the differences that we're going through, and whether it's Republican, Democrat, whether it's white, Black, whether it's whatever the differences that we've got, whether it's gay, straight, whatever, that when it comes to a concert, most people don't care. It's like kind of like sports and music is the place where the people, they're there for that music that they enjoy, whatever that music style is and everything. And a lot of times they could care less that it's a Black person next to them, an Asian person next to them, a gay person, straight. They're just there to enjoy the music, and the music is kind of the unifying force. I would argue that sports is the same way. You might be against one team or the other, but you're kind of in that battle with the common goal of rooting for that one opponent or against that one opponent. But for the most part, it also is very much of a unifying factor where you don't care necessarily what people's differences are. And I was wondering your thoughts on that as well.
Well, I would probably differentiate sports from music just because sports is kind of a visual activity. You kind of got to see something to really see it, to you know what's going on, unless, you know, you listen to the radio or whatnot. But, you know, I would say, yeah, I mean, like music, you know, is really, it's just an auditory experience that has that power without even really needing visuals. You know, and I know, like, you know, it's funny, like sports is interesting. I played sports in high school. I'm a competitive martial artist my whole life. And so there's definitely something valuable to getting, you know, to being physical. Where I think like where sports can even be used to manipulate some people is it like makes it, it replaces the benefit of actually engaging in physical activity, which I think is highly beneficial, and gives people that same rush to make them feel like they're in that competitive place with being able to sit on their couch and everything. So it's like, not to you know, rain on any sports fans' parades, but you know, it's like, I think like it can't be a full replacement to actually that physical exercise, even though it kind of does that in your brain. You know, I would want my daughter to, you know, engage in sports just as much as she enjoys watching them. I love watching sports, by the way. I mean, just from that same sort of, you know, competitive nature. But yeah, you could also see how sports can be manipulated, right? Like people die over sports, and it's almost like, you know, it's like back in the day you used to have the Roman Empire, you know, people would go and see people kill each other. And it's like, people can still be influenced in that way, you know? So some people might take it a little far, but you know, if you know the difference between, you know, what's real and you know, it's not, I love healthy competition.
Oh yeah. Healthy competition is real good and everything. One of the other things that I've talked about, and I've really noticed, I've noticed it happening for several generations now, but definitely it happened, I would argue, back in the 80s when I was in school, and when it's happening in the 2000s, and I would even argue the 2020s, is we're starting to see more blended music. Like, definitely you are, consider yourself a hip hop artist, but I'm seeing a lot of people that are blending different styles of music. Like, they might be incorporating the sounds of Asia. I've got a good friend of mine who actually is a big K-pop fan, and that's that whole Korean pop sound. And I've got another friend that's very much into reggae, and another good friend that actually does a show with us here. It's very much into funk music. So it seems to me that I remember that in college, I thought that the music would start to blend, and it would get to the point where you might not even be able to differentiate so much a person's musical style as just call them a musician. I think there was a famous jazz artist that said something along those lines, that he would rather just be called a good musician, didn't necessarily want to be called either a jazz or a blues musician or anything along those lines. But what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that we are moving more and more where people are incorporating all styles of music into what they're doing?
Man, I'm personally an artist that loves to do that. I love to take what people think is hip hop, and you know, hip hop, I love it because it does sample from so many different types of music. But even further than that, I like to genre bend, I guess, if you will. The first piece that got me international recognition was actually a piece that was featured in the film that I mentioned, The Beat. But it actually came out of an inspiration for something I wrote for my grandmother, who was my first musical teacher. And she was a classical pianist. When I fell in love with rap and hip hop, she didn't have the ear that was attuned to it. So I kind of wanted to see if I could write a song that she would like, a rap song. And so I figured, logically, I'm thinking, okay, she likes classical music, and if I just put a rap over something that she already likes, like, how can she refuse that if I'm speaking about something that she can relate to? And so I took it's a piece by Sergei Rachmaninoff, the Russian composer. I was her favorite composer. I took his Prelude in G minor, and I started writing a rap to the sheet music about how, you know, hip hop can be regarded as just as much of a high art form as classical music or even jazz. And we know that jazz had to go through that same sort of testing period where it wasn't seen as legitimate art and then finally was accepted. I wanted to do the same thing with hip hop. When I met Brandon in college and we agreed to collaborate on this film, he actually independently had this idea where he's like, yo, I wonder if the character that you're playing, you know, I had this idea that he was sitting in a bus stop with his friend and they're playing classical music over the speaker. And his friend is like, yo, why do they play this music in the hood? Like, people don't appreciate it. This is art. And then I respond like, yo, what you saying? You saying hip hop isn't art? Like, let me show you. And then my character starts freestyling to the music. So when he had that idea, I had this other piece that was already in the works. And so we just blended it together. And that became a song called This Isn't Art. And it's all about the social, the artistic merits of hip hop And it's written not like a chopped up sample. It's literally follows the entire piece from beginning to end. And that particular song not only was featured in that movie, it won the Lennon Award in the International John Lennon Songwriting Contest in 2014. And that was a total genre blend. And actually, it inspired a jazz musician named John Lindbergh, and who had seen the film. This is kind of a funny story. He was watching TV with his son, and he's like a staunch jazz conservative, and he was basically arguing with his son Raphael, like, "Yo, rap is an art. Like, I'm a jazz musician. Like, we do so much complex things musically that no hip hop artist is doing." And then the film came on TV, and he made a bet with his son. He's like, "I defy you to show me any sort of artistic merits from this hip hop film." And when that scene where my character starts rapping to classical music comes on, he had to throw in the towel. He's like, "Oh my God, I've never seen any hip hop like this." So he emails me like immediately after he finds me online and is like, "Yo, I want to make an album with you." And so I was up for the challenge. And we ended up recording an album. It's called Jazz Hop Revolution. You can find it on all the platforms. But it's another super genre blending kind of project. Like, it's not hip hop. It's more jazz than hip hop, but it's more rap than spoken word. He composed these grooves that were in all weird time signatures. I'm glad I was a musician because I could be able to figure it out and match the rhymes to it. But it's a real interesting project if you're interested in that type of thing. Like, yeah, it was a real experiment.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like a great experiment. One of the things that I know that artists of all sorts love to do is they love to serve as kind of the disruptors of society. I know there was a whole disrupt movement and everything. So how important do you think it is for artists to kind of like be advocates in terms of like trying to be disruptors and be the force of change, not just be the reporters of change, but also the force of change?
You know, I forget who it was that said it, but revolution starts with the artists. That's something I've always believed. And you mentioned Gil Scott-Heron, right? Like artists, for whatever reason, when you prioritize doing something new in society that hasn't been done before through your creativity, you're gonna be revolutionary. Like, art is revolutionary in its very nature because it's creating something that that comes from somewhere else. It comes from that human spirit, and anytime you can channel that and put it into a form, that is a revolutionary act against sort of what society wants to kind of put you in that box. So I definitely believe that the revolution gets spread through society through its artists, because we're the ones that are really challenging the status quo and pushing for something new and better and hopefully, you know, more liberating for society.
No, I definitely agree with you on that. One of the things that I know people have been talking about is the fact that the society in general is moving toward more of a majority-minority society, meaning that there are going to be more people of different kinds of ethnicities that will be kind of the rulers and things of that nature. There are some folks that feel that that's part of the reason that there's been such a support for that person that's about to leave 1600, and why there's some kind of been kind of this white male kind of like reverse kind of like rally cry to try to save themselves and things of that nature. I was just wondering, as one that is of mixed race and everything, what is your thoughts when you hear about the fact that we are about to be a majority-minority society, whether that's meaning not all the minorities together will be the vast majority of what our population looks like and will be a true melting pot, which is what I thought we should have been from the beginning. But I was wondering your thoughts.
Man, I have so many thoughts on that, and I have to actually run and teach a class, but let me just leave with this, because I think about this stuff so much. I just dropped a new album last year, at the end of last year, so, it's on Spotify, it's on Apple Music, it's on my Bandcamp, which is just my name for those people that can see it. It's called The Book of Ra. I actually have a song called Melting Pot on that album that speaks directly to that. And, I'll just say that race has always been a construct from the beginning, and we were forced to accept it and brutally enforced to accept this idea of race and separateness. We're starting to realize that we have more in common than we have different across different cultures. So I hope that we're moving into a place where we can celebrate the cultural roots and foundations of the human experience and learn from each other. And I think that, you know, white supremacy as a construct that that forced itself upon all of us to have to adapt, it hurt everybody, you know, in a different way. So I think we're starting to see that it's becoming more exposed and obvious to people so that we can all kind of find the human family that we all are a part of.
Yep. And I know you got to bounce, so I appreciate you being on. I appreciate Aris for getting me in touch with you. Like I was telling Sarah, I definitely hope that I can get you back on and everything. As you're walking out the door and everything, I would love to have you give your final thoughts of positivity to our global community and also any websites that you want to give people that they can reach you and that they can find you or the best ways that they can reach you. But definitely any words of positivity that you would like to share with our global audience, I'd love to hear you say that, as I know you got to get over there and teach those fine young minds and everything.
Yeah, I mean, like, we're the creators of our reality, you know what I'm saying? Like Sarah said, you know, and all the answers are within us, but we got to find them within each other. So, you know, continue to strive for the best possible future that you can even imagine. And because the truth is even greater than that. So, yeah, dream big, dream high. And, you can find the work that I do at rapforceacademy.com. If you're interested in getting involved in the global network that I'm a part of, hiphopcongress.com has more information on that. And yeah, I look forward to crossing paths with anybody that's feeling what we said.
Sounds good. And you were a great guest. I definitely appreciate you being on, learning a lot about you and everything. And like I said, definitely hoping to have you come back on in the near future. But definitely it was a great interview and glad that folks got to learn more about what you've got going on and all of the amazing things that you're doing. Like I said, I know that Aris has directed me to a lot of great artists and she's done an amazing job with that and everything. So if you want to give a shout out to the whole UBO family, I'll let you do that as well.
Oh, it's without question. You know, UBO is Hip Hop Congress fam. She already know that. And now all y'all do too.
Yeah. Appreciate you. So definitely appreciate you joining me and have a good time with those students and everything. Hopefully they don't drive you too crazy, because I know that sometimes those students can drive us crazy when they want to.
Nah, it's good. They're good kids. All right.
Appreciate you. Mark. All right. Peace. Let's see if I can get him off. Yep. So that was Rahman, and he was definitely sharing a lot of his information and all of that. So trying to see if I can get him off there. There we go. So yeah, so that was Rahman Jamal, and he was sharing all kinds of great information and all of that. Also was glad to have Sarah Thiel on the show as well. And like I said, you're definitely going to be continuing this great online dinner party. You're going to wrap up a little bit earlier than usual and all of that. But definitely with some great interviews that we had. And I do apologize for the technical difficulties that we were having and all of that. But I did want to be sure that we got our amazing guests on. And I think we did a good job of having them enjoy their conversation and the things that they've got happening in their world. And like I said, we did have some definite guests that are going to be our mystery guests and all of that. So one of the mystery guests, like I said, the greatest escape I ever made was when I left Appleton, Wisconsin. And by the way, the other mystery guest is this particular person. He says, the woman whom history would remember as Russia's longest running female leader was actually the eldest daughter of an impoverished Prussian prince. That's right. She was the eldest daughter of an impoverished Prussian prince. So that was a little bit about that mystery guest and all of that. Let me tell you a little bit more as well. The woman his history would remember as Russia's longest ruling female leader was actually the eldest daughter of an impoverished female prince. I actually said that and everything. Another one, she came to power in a bloodless coup that later turned deadly. That's right. She came to power in a bloodless coup that later turned deadly. And she definitely had to face down a number of things. She faced down more than a dozen uprisings during her reign. Of the various uprisings that threatened her rule, the most dangerous came in 1773. So we know that this is not a spring chicken in the sense of history and all of that, since what she was involved in was in 1773. So that's a little bit about that particular mystery guest. And we do have some other clues that I'll be revealing to you as well. So hopefully folks are thinking about who the mystery guest and are actually getting some ideas as to who this person may be. She was actually faithfully loyal to her lovers, both during their relationship and after it ended. always parting on good terms, she bestowed upon them titles, land, palace, and even people. That's right. She gave them even people as well. And her reign was marked by vast territorial expansion, which greatly added to Russia's coffers, but did little to alleviate the suffering of her people. And contrary to popular belief, she actually died a fairly mundane, uneventful death. Don't believe the stories about the toilet or the horse. So, like I said, there have been some rumors about her involving a story of a toilet or a horse and all of that. And her eldest son met the same grisly fate as his father. So that's a little bit about our mystery guest and all of that. So he met the same grisly fate as his father and all of that. So that's just a little bit about our mystery guest. And in just a little bit, I'll be telling you the two mystery guests. I was thinking about having a third mystery guest, but I think I'll save that third one for next week and all of that. And I'll probably give you the pictures next week as well. As you know, I always give you a picture of the mystery guest, but I did not pull those up this time around. But I think that you will find that these are some amazing people and some amazing historical lessons that you may be thinking about as you're thinking about our mystery guest and all of that. So definitely keep that in mind, these amazing mystery guests that we have and everything along those lines. So definitely appreciate you learning about our mystery guests and what they are all about. So like I said, they are truly amazing mystery guests. And I think that you will definitely be thrilled when you find out who these people are and all of that. So I'm going to see if this other person wants to come and join our conversation as well. And if they do, then we'll have them on. But if not, then we're going to just kind of like probably wrap it up around 6 o'clock or something like that and move on with an abbreviated version of the online dinner party. And I do apologize for our little bit of technical difficulties and all of that, but definitely some great conversation with Sarah Hill of Helium, as well as Rama Jamal, who is definitely a great musician out of the California area and all of that. So definitely just keep that in mind. Some great conversations that are taking place, and we were glad to have both of those amazing guests join us here today. And like I said, I'm actually outside again enjoying some of this fine weather. It was actually not too cold, even though it's a little bit chilly now and everything, but it wasn't too chilly earlier. It was actually kind of pleasant. And I think I might have to go give me some of this fine Korean food that is staring me in my face and all of that. So you'll see me disappear. That might be where I'm heading for and all of that. But definitely some great conversation going on. And as far as our mystery guest, the mystery guest this time around, and I do not know why folks were not guessing this. Y'all should be ashamed of yourselves. I give you a magician. I said it was a specialty act, and it was a magician. How many famous magicians are there? There are only a few famous magicians out there in the world, one of them being the legendary. And I did say legendary, Harry Houdini. Y'all could not guess Harry Houdini. I am very disappointed in y'all folks in not guessing Harry Houdini. And the other one that was involving Russia, in the politics and all of that, I would have thought that y'all would have got Catherine the Great. Catherine the Great, particularly when I gave you the clue about the horse. But definitely, I would have thought that you got Catherine the Great as well as Harry Houdini. Those were our mystery guests for this particular edition of the show and all of that. So I'm a little disappointed that y'all were not able to figure out who our mystery guests were and were not able to guess our mystery guests in that sense. So y'all let me down a little bit. Not figuring out our mystery guest when I thought it was fairly obvious who they should have been and all of that. But I did want to bring up some of our great shows that happen here on this network. I think that y'all will thoroughly enjoy these great shows that happen on a regular basis. And we have some great shows that take place here on a regular basis. One of them I'll be joining tomorrow, that being the Gamers Den. So definitely check out the Gamers Den, and here's a little bit of the Gamers Den. Okay, maybe the Gamers Den doesn't want to.
My name's Brandon. I'm a world traveler, foodie, and YouTuber. Together, you and I will find the best travel hacks, tips, and best places to explore. Join me as we find new adventures together, live only on IBM.TV.
All right, folks, that's a slightly abbreviated version of the online dinner party. Don't forget that on Monday we'll have the I'll have some more amazing guests already lining some of them up for you and everything. And of course, we'll be following the news to see what's happening in the world of news, sports, entertainment, social justice, and a number of other things as well. So definitely do keep that in mind. Of course, we'll be there on Sunday with our roundtable and the funk music with Zach. So definitely those will be coming your way on Sunday. And of course, tomorrow we've got the game. Then I understand we got exciting guests. Tanya DePaz, who actually does a lot of work around trying to make sure that we have diversity in the gaming industry. So she'll be our guest. I've already sent her a link. I know that she's looking forward to a great conversation with us on that particular day. So looking forward to having Tanya DePaz as our guest on the Gamer's Den. And that's between the hours of 1 and 3. And who knows, who might show up at Podcasters Thursdays. Because we oftentimes have some great podcasters and some amazing guests that come on at that show as well. So definitely some great shows coming your way right here on the International Broadcast Media. That's right. You can go to the website, and I'm really liking the new website, IBMTV.TV, IBMTV.TV, and check out the fantastic ways that the website is being developed. Brandon needs to be commended for what he's done on that regard. He's put together a wonderful website, and I have actually become a big fan of it, and it's even growing and being developed even further. So, like I said, I saw the rollout is looking good, and I know that he's going to add some other perks and things of that nature. And by the way, don't forget to go to Brandon Scott's website, because you can actually find some goodies that are supporting my shows as well. That's right. You can go over there and check out some goodies that are supporting my show, as well as IBM TV, as well as a number of projects he's got, including a new line. That's right. He's got a whole new line that he put out, I think, about a week or two ago. So he's got some amazing things that you might want to check out by going to his website and seeing about these amazing projects that he's got and all of that. So keep that in mind and go over there and check it out. Right now, my stomach is telling me that it's time to get hungry and to go get some food. And it probably doesn't help that I'm outside near some restaurants. So I'm going to get ready to break and go check out some of these fine restaurants and everything, and maybe grab me a bite to eat and all of that. So we're going to call it an edition of the online dinner party. And I do apologize for any technical difficulties that happened and all of that, but I think you got some great conversations with some amazing guests. So keep that in mind, and we'll be back next week with more exciting guests and all of that. I'm definitely hoping to have Sarah Hill back, as well as Rahman Jamal. But I think that you learned a lot about their thoughts, what helium is all about, and definitely what his music is all about in that regard. So definitely looking forward to having some more great conversations with these amazing individuals at a later date. So definitely keep that in mind. Right now, I'm going to let y'all check out what the radio show is all about, so y'all can see the logo that we use for that. And I'll bring up maybe the ambassador as well, as of course the plane to get us on out of here. But definitely some great conversation. I look forward to some more great conversations later on. And like I said, don't forget that you got all kinds of great things happening on a regular basis here on this network. And of course, we've got all kinds of great folks that are doing things, including the ambassador. So let's see what the ambassador is talking about as she gets ready to get us on out of here.
Okay. धन्यवाद हमारा म्यूजिक सुनने का।
What's the coolest thing about your job?
Engineers take the very best of science and technology. They solve problems.
Did you know all that stuff when you were my age?
All I knew is that I really liked math and I really liked science.
Put the keys down, Kevin.
But I'm going to drive home.
There are several warning signs present that you shouldn't be driving.
I guess I have really been looking for love in this dating app. Yep, I'm definitely going to call a ride home.
When I was your age, I was just like you. When I was your age, I was just like you, fascinated by stars. But now I get to search for life in the universe.
Wow.
Does anyone want to be a scientist now?
I do.
Awesome. We need more girls in STEM.
Thank you.